can stay here in Jeremiah chapter 2. For the first 2 weeks of this series, we are going to probably stick around in one text, and then from there on out, we're going to be jumping all over the place. So get your fingers ready to type or fingers ready to turn or whatever you need to do. If you need to divvy out family responsibilities, you turn to the first one, you turn to the next one, that'd be fine. But for today, we're going to be sticking around mostly in Jeremiah chapter 2. Today, we're starting a new series that if you check in your bulletin, you'll see what it is that we're talking about. We're going to talk about idolatry and modern America. Now, that might come as a, like, okay, Caleb, like, how is this going to be a multiple-week series? Because in modern-day America, it's not pretty typical we go around selling idols all the time, at least not idols that we actually worship. Sometimes we'll sell little statues and things that help decorate and fill out a theme in your house or something. But it's not very regular that you go around and there are temples with idols that people bow down to these statues anymore. But I am going to propose, and for many of us, it would not be a surprise that we all struggle with idolatry. It doesn't look the same as it did for the people of Israel, where they had a temple to God and then slowly started adding other temples and other worship places for other gods to get them certain things. But our hearts, as Jeremiah would tell us, are desperately ill, or depending on your translation, might even say wicked. Who can know it? I want to propose to all of us that even those of us who belong to God, who have been saved by the blood of Jesus, that we are, in a regular occurrence, tempted, if not drawn away, to worship idols that are worthless. But we need to be on guard and be prepared, because it's not so obvious anymore. It's not like, oh, golden calf, just don't bow down to it. It's not that simple anymore. And to be fair, it was never that simple to begin with in the first place. But in order for us to get into this series, I'm going to do a lot of groundwork here for the first part so that we understand the terms that I'm using, so that we all get on the same page. Because for some of us, well, we grew up in church and have various ideas of what idols are. Some of us never grew up in church, and the fact I'm talking about idols, you're like looking up and like, what is he actually talking about? And you're like, okay, we got statues, we don't have those. And so I want us to make sure that we're understanding what we're talking about. So for this first week, we're going to just talk about what is idolatry, okay? There are many different definitions and ideas of what people will tell you as far as what today's versions of idolatry look like. Idolatry in other nations and other contexts will still look pretty similar to what you would read in the Old Testament. There are literally places of worship. There are little temples or big temples or little things that people do and sacrifice, and there's altars. Sometimes animals actually do get killed. Oftentimes food is brought to this one random place. It's a lot similar, but in America, you don't see that as much. You might stumble upon it in some of our Asian communities where you will go into a restaurant or a market or something. You might see something that is like, oh, that's definitely like an idol. But most of the time, like, it's not like you're going to a temple anymore to worship this idol. I would propose that for clarity's sake, we need to understand that there are two different things that we often blend into the word idol or idolatry. So we'll get into that as we go. But one is there's a false god, and then there are idols. Okay, and we'll talk about the difference between those two, even though, to be honest, from here on out, I'm just going to say idols because it's probably a lot easier for me not to get tripped up. But first, let's jump into what is idolatry. And I'm going to tell you that on the base level, and this is not my working definition for the entire thing, but the base level is that idolatry is the worship of anyone other than God or anything other than God. Now, that doesn't really help us all that much, which is why we're going to jump into it. But in order to jump into that definition, worshiping anything or anyone other than God, we then first have to ask the question, what is worship, right? Christianese 101. For many of us, if we grew up in church and we understand worship, and then there's like this whole thing like worship music, and then we have this positive connotation with the word worship. And so when we talk about worshiping false gods, we're like, well, like, of course, like, I don't sing to my bank account, right? I don't, like, give money to this thing in an act of worship. The things that we typically understand to be Christian worship, we're like, well, we don't do that for anything else. We don't read a Bible of sorts for anything else from other places. And so, like, understanding what is at the heart of worship. Now, if we were doing a series on worship, the definition of worship would take a whole lot longer than what we're going to do today. This is going to take us about 2 minutes, and I'm just going to ask you to trust me and work with me, because this is what I mean when I use the word worship, okay? It's fine if you have a different definition of the word worship. We can talk about it later, because this series is not about worship as much as it is on idolatry. So what is worship? At the basic level, I would propose, this is my working thought, is that worship is praising and or assigning value or intrinsic worth to something or someone, okay? You'll have a lot of really smart people that when they talk about worship and worship of God, there's the glory and the weight of God, and the worship is the response and making sure we put the proper weight. So like when you think of a balance, right? Here's the worth of God, and here's all the stuff we're trying to do to like balance it out. There's that kind of aspect to it, where there is assigning of weight. And when we talk about weight in ancient times, we're really talking about value and importance and worth. So worshiping is taking an object of something or someone and assigning a value to it, and usually in a positive way, saying this is a very important, this is a very valuable, this thing has a lot of worth, and this is a great thing that we should all be worried about succeeding at doing, right? Well, I would propose that worship in this context takes two separate things. First is it demonstrates, it shows itself in a dedication or sacrifice of our resources. When you worship something or someone, you use the things that you have in life and you give it, at least in some portion, to this thing or being that you are worshiping. I listed out 7 different things just as thought starters. These are not the only ones, but we can dedicate our time, our money, our affections, our praise, the things that we think about, how we decide to make decisions, and our loyalty are all things that are our resources that, when offered to something or someone, is an act of worship. Now, that doesn't mean in all contexts that using your time for something that is not God is a idolatrous act of worship, but it means that there's a potential there that it could be. So what then means, like, if we just use this as our only line to support this idea of worshiping something other than God, we would have a big problem on our hands. But if we balance this out with the second thing, is that not only is a worship of someone or something a dedication of our resources or a sacrifice of our resources, it's also used to exchange an expectation that it gives us something in return, specifically something good, blessing, or as the Bible often will call it, life. So there's this thing or person that is very important, and we will sacrifice or dedicate, we will utilize all of our life's resources, or at least part of our life's resources, for this thing. But in return, we expect good. We expect it to give us life. And I list out a couple different examples of what I mean by life or blessing. Maybe we expect there to be peace. So I will use my money to do this so that it brings me peace and security in my life. Maybe it's understanding. We want to have some sort of knowledge and wisdom. And like, if I utilize my thoughts, this will result in me being smarter or wiser than everyone else. It might be the feeling of comfort or security, success, fulfillment in life, pleasure, or simply health. When we go into the realm of worshiping false gods or idols, we are doing a quid pro quo. I give up my resources, you give me more of maybe a different kind, but I get something from you. Now, when we look at this and we're like, okay, well, now you just made worship like this really dirty word. I don't want to use worship when I talk about God. It's not the exact same. It's almost reversed. which, ha, surprise, when we do things backwards from what God has provided from us, we get things messed up all the time. Worship in the Christian context is God has given you life. And so you use your resources out of thanksgiving. You don't actually get God to give you anything by using your resources. It's the reverse. And yet this is exactly what our hearts have a tendency to do. We assign worth to something. We then give it something like it needs something in exchange for more stuff out of it. And this is where we get into the worship of false gods. Because a real God doesn't need anything from you. A real God's already given you everything you need. And then the correct response then is to then use it to glorify and worship and praise and thank that God. So, just for the sake of if you were wondering, so that we could still use the word worship, I would say that Christian worship is expressing our love to God in response to his grace towards us. That's not the kind of worship we're talking about when we talk about idolatry. The worship of false gods doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like expressing love for your bank account. It doesn't look like expressing your love for your career because it's given you so much grace. You're doing it in order to get something out. You're doing it as an investment strategy. The worship of the true God, the one that actually has the ability to give us life, is the reverse. He gives us all of the life that we need, every blessing that we could ever want and we don't even deserve, and our worship is a response to that. So that's my little dissertation on worship. So we're going to jump in to the rest of the definition, the worship of false gods. So if that is what worship looks like, a dedication or sacrifice of our resources in the expectation that this thing or person will give us more life or blessing in return, then what is idolatry? And this is where you're going to get a lot of different answers, depending on who you read or listen to. And so I would just want us to work through these couple of things. This is my working definition of what idolatry as a whole is. It's worshiping anything other than God. It's the giving of your dedication and your sacrifice of your resources in exchange for something from anywhere except God. If your expectation is to receive some sort of blessing, peace, security, comfort from anything other than God himself, and you're willing to sacrifice your resources or sing its praises, it is idolatry. It is an incorrect evaluation of the worth of that thing or that idea or that person. Now, I'm just going to throw this up here, that it's not just a matter of importance. Many times when I talk in churches, people will give the good Christian church, Christianese answer that an idol is anything that is more important to us than God. I would say, for sure, if there's something in your life that's more important than God, that's definitely an idol. But to give you the idea that somehow something just has to be more important to you than God is not a correct understanding of what idolatry is. It's not just a matter of importance. You can be worshiping a false god and still have God be more important to you than that thing. We can, even though we belong to God, even though we are fully ready to go to heaven, wrongly value something in our life and expect something from that thing rather than God. It's not just a matter of order of importance. One, that's a Western way of thinking about it. But second of all, if it doesn't come from God and we expect something out of it that gives us life or happiness, it's the wrong source to be expecting life from. So it's not just a matter of importance. It's not just something that's more, that has gotten a little bit too important to you. It's something that's wrong in your heart. Second, this is where a little differentiation comes in just for sake of understanding. An idol is often just a physical manifestation of the thing that we worship. I'm going to say that again. An idol is just a physical manifestation or a physical way of seeing something that we actually worship internally. So when I use the word idolatry as a whole, it's the worship of false gods, right? But an idol, those little statues that people bow down to, we would say is like, well, they're worshiping an idol, but realistically, they're not. No one actually thought that they were worshiping the little statue. It's just a representation of the thing that they worship, that they can't see. So they use a physical object that they can see to facilitate their worship. No one actually thought that this one little statue of Diana was Diana herself. It was just a statue. Yet they came and did their worship. They used that to facilitate their worship of the goddess that they worshiped. So I'm going to tell you, the scariest thing about modern day idolatry in America is that pretty much anything can be an idol, but it can also be an idol of almost any other false god. Just because you have a thing doesn't mean that it is an idol. And just because you have a certain thing doesn't make it an idol of only one false god that you are worshiping. So, for instance, lots of people will, you know, especially at the teenagers, will tell you, like, your phones or your social media is an idol, right? Well, if you get rid of your phone, does that stop your worship of the false gods that you're using your phone to facilitate your worship of? Oh, it might make it harder, but that doesn't mean that you've gotten rid of it. An idol is just a physical connection point to the god or false god that you are worshiping. It's dangerous because there are plenty of perfectly safe things that you can have. Unlike if it's like, this is a statue, and right on the statue it says, "This, if you own this, you therefore worship this god." Things get a lot trickier in modern day idolatry because nearly anything could be an idol. But the problem isn't the idol. The problem is the heart that uses the idol to worship a false god. So in modern day idolatry, it's worshiping anything other than God, and it can take nearly any means possible. Which means we really need to be on guard on our hearts and our lives. It's not the objects that we have that are the problem. It's the heart inside of us that looks for life somewhere other than God. And it can take anything, including your family, your marriage relationship, your children. It can take perfectly good things and dedicate that to a false god, to an idol in our own hearts. So I want us to be warned. It's not just something that's more important to you than God, because most of us can keep God at the top of the list, but a lot of the things on the list shouldn't even be on the list. Like, God should be the list. But we're like, okay, I worship God, and he's really important to me. He's like the most important thing, but you know, like, my career is really important to me. I'm going to work my tail off to get every last promotion and last dollar I can out of it. And I'm going to tell you that just like God's people throughout all of history have had to struggle with, that is a form of idolatry. Some sort of weird Christian syncretism. Modern day America is not immune to idolatry or the worship of false gods. So this is what I would tell you. If you were to ask me what's idolatry, I'm going to tell you idolatry is assigning worth or value that belongs to God to anything else. In any degree. Not just like, oh, it's a little bit too much. No, like if you give the worth that belongs to God to something else, anything else, it is idolatry. You have ceased to worship God in that area of your life and began to worship something or someone else. The worth that rightly belongs to God, the expectation of my life coming from God, not just our physical breathing life, but the good things, the blessings in our life, the expectations of the things that we want, if they do not stem from God, and we assign that worth to something else, it is idolatry. Idolatry is assigning worth or value that belongs to God to anything else in any degree. And now it's like, oh, I see a lot of your eyes were like, oh boy. Yeah, this series is going to get uncomfortable. Be prepared. Because a lot of things you'll be like, wait, is that an idol? I don't know. And I want you to think that. I want you to be mindful. I want you to make sure that you are evaluating things in your life, relationships in your life, the things that come from life that you enjoy or don't enjoy. I want you to properly value them. Because if we do not value them and see how they come and give life to us from God, we will begin to worship false gods. So, two questions to help us evaluate if we're assigning worth that belongs to God to anything or to anything else in any degree is, first ask yourself the question, do we sacrifice or offer our resources to anything other than God? And again, this doesn't mean like, well, you spent money on food this week, so therefore you're worshiping food. No, it's a sacrifice in order, the second question, what do we expect life from? Do we expect life from anything other than God? And if we're willing to sacrifice resources, whether it just be thoughts, or our money, or our time, are we willing to sacrifice anything of our resources that one came from God in the first place and give it to something else in order to get life from it, in order to get happiness from it, in order to get security from it? I'm going to tell you, that is going to be modern idolatry. So, now that we got some working definitions, so what's the big problem? What's the big problem with idolatry? Right? So here's the thing. Modern day Christians here in America, they're like, okay, idolatry. Yeah, not good. God doesn't like it. But like, we've gotten into this whole like, well, God saved me, I'm going to heaven. Me worshiping my career, my family, my peace of mind doesn't prevent me from going to heaven. So what's the big deal? What's the big problem with expecting some enjoyment out of other things in life other than God? What's the big problem? Obviously, none of us would verbalize that. That's why I did it for you. But it can be. This is why I would submit to you that like most of this goes by the wayside. We just don't think about it because we don't think it's a big deal. Right? We love God. We worship God. What's the big deal if I accidentally, wrongly value something else in my life? Well, I'm going to tell you, Jeremiah chapter 2 tells you there's a lot of big problems with idolatry. Even in the weird, awkward, hidden form of idolatry we have today in modern day America. So what's the big problem with idolatry? Idolatry demonstrates a belief that something is wrong with God himself. Someone do me a favor and tell that to wait. See how technology's trying to mess this up. Okay. Your mouse is on the TV screen. You can see your mouse on the big screen. But anyway, we'll just keep moving on. We'll figure it out. We'll let Jim measure. It's on this computer. You can hit escape. Yeah, there you go. You want the left one. Yep. There we go. Nailed it. Hopefully I won't be preaching for another hour. Otherwise we'll see that message again. Woof. All right, so what's the big problem with idolatry? Idolatry demonstrates a belief that there is something wrong or deficient with God himself. So jump with me into Jeremiah chapter 2. We read this whole thing for scripture reading. I'm not seeking to exegete the entirety of the book of Jeremiah, simply this lesson that we can learn from this. So we'll jump to verse 5. This is what God says to his people. Jeremiah is prophesying to the people in Jerusalem and in Israel about how their unfaithfulness to God is going to lead to them being destroyed and taken out of the land. And this is what God says in the beginning part of Jeremiah. This is what the Lord says. What fault did your fathers find in me that they went so far from me, followed worthless idols, and became worthless themselves? When we begin to look for life, when we begin to do acts of worship for something or someone else in expectation of getting something that we value as good things, so we go to the marketplace of false gods and we pay a god and the god gives us something in return. It demonstrates that we believe internally, whether mentally or consciously or not, there's something wrong with God. If we are willing to go to some other place or some other person to achieve the things we want in life, intrinsically it tells God, you can't or you won't give me that. And what I want is more important than you. Real awkward, right? And God takes it that way. You can hear the personal tone in this, right? What fault did your fathers find in me? Well, what did I do so wrong that your ancestors decided I wasn't good enough that they needed to go find life in addition to the life I gave them? God told them, like, listen, I brought you out of the desert, these next several verses, where there is no water, I brought you into a fertile land where you could grow stuff in the middle of nowhere. I offered to bring you life in this desolate place, and yet you stopped asking, where is the Lord? You stopped looking for life from me. What did I do so wrong? Obviously, God knows that he didn't do anything wrong. And the correct answer is there wasn't. The problem was the people. The problem was their heart. But when we begin to worship anything other than God in any degree, if we're taking assignment of life and value that belongs to God and being willing to even take a small slice of it and put it somewhere else, we're telling God, there's something wrong with you. You're deficient. You don't have what I'm looking for. I think that that should alone answer the question, what's the big deal with idolatry? If we love God and we worship him and he provided a way of salvation by sacrificing his own son for the sins that we committed, that we should be hesitant to do anything that would say, God, I don't think you're good enough. Yet when we value things improperly and expect life out of things other than God, that's exactly what we tell God. You're not good enough. Not enough for me. I need more. Or I need things faster. You're just not quick enough. Secondly, to get my clicker working again. There we go. The second thing that's such a big problem with idolatry is that idols and false gods are not capable of providing life. Aside from the fact that we're willing to tell God that there's something wrong with you, you're not giving me the life that I want, false gods, we go look for something else and we start worshiping this, those things aren't even capable of giving us what we want. They might try and trick you with some sort of weird counterfeit, but they're not even capable of giving you life. This is what Jeremiah chapter 2 is all about. So in verse 5, God opens with, what fault did you find in me that you went so far from me and worship worthless idols? They're just sticks and stones. People carve them and you take care of them. They're kind of like pet rocks. Yet you go to these idols and you expect that the deity that is represented by this idol to give you some sort of life that I can't provide you because you think I am deficient. I'm the one who brought you here. You're the reason that I'm the reason you can even live here. And you enter this land and life was so good, you stopped asking, where is the Lord? You stopped looking for God. Without being too direct, to do this in a Minnesota nice way, do we also know a group of people who might have life so good that they might stop asking the question, where is God? Are there some people who have been so extravagantly blessed with the life that they have that they've wrongly assigned where it came from, what they should or shouldn't have, and began to believe the lies of where it came from, or how to get more, or how to enjoy life even more, that we, tipped the answer there, have stopped asking, where is God? Where can I get life that comes from God? Not from all this other stuff that we can have. Where is God? And it got to the point in verse 8, God told Jeremiah to tell the people in Jerusalem, even the priests quit asking, where is the Lord? Even spiritual leaders were so blinded that they stopped asking, where can I find God? The desire and hope for knowing God and having the life that comes from God was so lost on these people. And they followed useless idols that are completely worthless. Then God tells Jeremiah, I'm going to send judgment because you won't follow after me. And then he says, go look at all the other nations. Do the pagan nations just switch gods on you? The pagan nations that, my God is Baal, they just randomly one day decide to stop worshiping Baal and worship somebody else? No. Nobody does that. Pagan nations don't switch gods. Now, like, maybe they add on to and all these things, but, like, in this time frame where Jeremiah was living in Israel, the nations were defined by the gods that they worshiped. They didn't just randomly say, like, I don't want to worship this god anymore. This month it's going to be a different god. They don't do that. They don't swap them out. And then look what God says. Has the nation ever exchanged its gods, even though they're not really gods? And the answer to that is no, they don't. They don't just randomly swap the gods they worship. And he says, but my people did. My people exchanged their glory, the life-giving God of the entire universe. They exchanged that for worthless idols. And then verse 13. My people have committed two evils, or a double evil. It's like really bad. They have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and dug cisterns for themselves. And the worst part of it all is that they're broken cisterns. They can't even hold water. And we're all like, okay. So, this happened to me this season, right? Got the rain gutters all set up and put them into my rain barrels. I have 5 rain barrels tied all together with a PVC pipe. I almost brought one today, but I have a very small car and didn't feel like carrying it. But I hooked them all up. They were filling them just fine. One day we had a good rain. I was like, oh, this is great. Went out there 3 days later and like all the water was gone. I was like, what happened? So I just started looking around and it's the next rainfall. I'm like, okay. And I go out there and I'm like, oh, this one is leaking. Of course, because it's tied to all the other ones also leaked. So quickly I had to pull the one that's leaking out so that all the other water doesn't get lost. Well, cisterns are a pretty similar thing to rain barrels, except that they were bigger and in the ground, but same idea. They were, and some of you probably own houses that have old cisterns in your basement, but you might not know that because it just looks like a block wall. But cisterns were a rain collection system in older times that you would funnel rain into a holding tank. Usually it was underground. So in Jeremiah's time, in the desert climate that they were in, if they didn't have water in a stream, they would dig a hole and funnel water into it so that they would have water in order to water their plants and their animals and the whole nine yards, right? Some of these cisterns were huge. But the problem with cisterns, like my rain barrel, is sometimes they break. And when things that are intended to hold water break, they don't hold water anymore. And God says that these people, when they have begun to worship idols, they've done something so bad. So let's walk through this. One, they've abandoned me, the fountain of living water. Okay? A natural spring with all the goodness in it and none of the badness in it that's just constantly flowing, right? Some of us have seen those in person, just a spring sticking out of a hill. Some of the best water you will ever drink, most of the time, as long as it's not poisoned. God says, I'm the fountain of living water. I have no end of the water that I'm going to provide you. And water in this context, of course, is a source of life. God is saying, I have an endless supply of life to give to you. And I'm the best water you're going to ever have. It's the only water around that is going to guarantee you life. And he said, you have this perfectly good bubbling stream right here. And you're like, there's just something not right about that. I'm going to go over here and dig a hole in the ground. Put some rocks in it. Let the water sit in there. So there's like 3 kinds of water. One, an active stream, some sort of spring water creek that has moving water. That's the best top-of-the-line stuff. Middle line, well. You dig really, really far down, you find some water that's moving underground, still pretty good. The last is the stagnant water that sits out in the sun all day. Okay? And so the God says, like, these people have done something so terrible. They went from the best source of water and life you could ever have in the desert climate that they're in, chose the worst method of finding water to begin with, and then they build something that doesn't even hold water. And somehow they keep looking in that pit and saying, where's my life? And these people are willing to go to this pit on a regular daily basis and be like, I'm going to get life out of this. You keep putting the bucket down, you keep scooping it up, and nothing comes out. Meanwhile, there's a spring right there. They have declared there's something wrong with God. The life he gives isn't the one I want. And then they go looking, like our point says, to gods that are incapable of giving life. A broken cistern in the ground is not capable of holding water. It can't give life to those who need it. And although we might trick ourselves into believing that our bank accounts can give us life, that good relationships with spouses or boyfriends and girlfriends can give us life, even having kids that make our lives happy somehow gives us life, these idols are incapable of giving us the life that God has offered to us, free flowing. Let us not seek after things that cannot provide life. And then the last warning that we see in Jeremiah 2, God says this time and time again, idolatry makes the worshiper as worthless as the idol. He says, they stopped following me. Why? What fault did they find in me that they went so far from me, from the best all the way to the worst, and the worst part is that it was even broken. They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They no longer serve their purpose. Just like a broken rain barrel or a broken cistern cannot hold water, it doesn't do its job anymore. The people who worship broken cisterns are just as pointless. They do not do their job, and they cannot hold on to life. So let this be a warning to us, even in our modern day idolatry that is a little bit more subtle, that the life we expect out of things or other people other than God will leave us high and dry. We won't have life. We'll have the fight to have the life, but we're not going to have it. We won't get it because life comes from the spring. So go to the spring, not to the pit in the ground that's got a crack in it. So the rest of the series is helping us locate our idols because they're not as easy as telling you to go home and throw out all your gold statues. So I'm going to leave you with this as a way of homework and a way of evaluating yourself. These two questions. Ask yourself, where do my resources go? Where do I spend my time, my money, my affection, the things I say good things about, the things I think about, the way I make decisions, and where does my loyalty lie? That will begin to reveal plenty. If you need to, go pull your month's spending report from your bank account. Again, just because you spend money on it doesn't mean that you worship it. You can buy coffee and not worship coffee. It's possible. And then the second question is, where do you look for your life? Again, not like your actual heart beating kind of life. Things that we think are the abundant life Jesus promised to give us, the things that give us happiness, which really ought to be joy, the things that give us blessing, the things that we seek to try and find, like peace and comfort, or success, fulfillment in life, pleasure, health, understanding and wisdom. Where do you think that stuff comes from for you? And I understand it's like in any degree. So like, it could just be like a little bit you think that money does this. It's still idolatry. Even if it's not your primary answer, if it's like, God's answered all of these, well, 90%. No. Like, if you have a spring of living water, why would you go drink mud out of a pit that can't hold water? I think just because we're not going to be exegeting Jeremiah for the rest of the series, I think that one thing we should be mindful of is the great irony in this book that the cisterns were sometimes called pits. And where do they throw Jeremiah when they are done listening to what he has to say? In a broken cistern, a miry pit. This is literally what a miry pit is. It's a cistern that is broken, that can't hold water anymore, just got a bunch of soot and gook at the bottom. So they chuck Jeremiah in a broken down cistern, and Jeremiah's like, this is the whole point. Here I am talking to you from the spring of living water, and here you are throwing me in a pit that can't even hold it. We are not going to get what we want, first of all, nor should we want what these things can offer us because it is not as good as what God has to offer. Life, happiness, blessings can only come from the proper source. So let us only look to that source. Not that source and like a little bit of other time. Like, well, Tuesday is not a big deal. I'll just go drink from a stagnant puddle of water in the alley. Like, why would you do that? Don't look for life somewhere where it cannot come from. Worship God with your whole being. And we're going to address one by one things in our life that we expect to bring us life and happiness that can't do it, that need to be properly aligned and valued to understand that God is the one that gives us life. Next week, we're going to see a narrative as far as how this actually plays out, this, you know, idols being incapable of providing life. And then after that, we're going to hit one by one modern day idols that you will probably find in America and other places, but specifically America, because I don't want to pretend like I know what's going on in all the other countries. So we'll close in prayer as we seek to take this journey, finding our idols and getting rid of them. Father, we come to you, and if nothing else, come to you today to tell you that we understand that you are the only source of true life. That only in worshiping you can we fulfill our purpose, find our worth, and gain life. Help us to want the life that you offer instead of telling you that there is something wrong or deficient with you. Help us to be willing to do even radical things in order to teach our hearts that you alone are the source of life, the one that we can come to with our problems, the one who understands us, who understands what we need it. And we pray that through this series, we would find those hidden idols and false gods and ideas and things that we incorrectly value and get rid of them and get them in alignment. We can be people who worship you alone with nothing else in the way. The life that you bring to us in a spring that never runs dry, and understand that any other attempts is like trying to drink water from a puddle. But help us to hear from you and to obey the words of Jesus calling to us. In Jesus' name, amen.